Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, as ever, Louis McCaffrey, and this week I'm joined by a very handsome, beautiful panel. First up, heading the boys, captain of the boys, something like that, is Christopher Somani.
Thanks for that.
I'm also joined by a silhouette of a man. It's Stuart Dugan. I believe he's there. We can't really see him, but...
I did think that when I came on. I was like, this room's not very well lit for this, but... It is what it is. I'm not really a big light man, and I think I'm obscuring the lights in the back. Maybe I'm not. I'm still here though, and I'm pleased to be here.
You're a sound man, Stu. You're not in the lighting department. So
That's it. I work in the shadows.
Absolutely. Well, you do your best work. We're also joined by a returning Liam Divers, who I don't think we've seen in ages. I don't know when the last time you were on the weekly, Liam. It's far too long, my man.
It's been a long, long time. Thank you for having me back. I must have served my time in Cynic jail and been allowed back.
Yep, it's. I think Gal must have got pretty far down the request list this week, but it's good to have you back.
Nobody was available. I actually don't know. I said nobody else is available. So
it was either you or like Keith or Brian or something like that. So I'm glad they didn't get to that point. Anyway, we're full of banter, full of hilarity just now, but we do need to start off in a kind of serious note. And obviously in the last couple of days we've had the passing of Bertie Auld. Lisbon Lion, absolute hero of a man. A hilarious individual with all the kind of stuff going around social media in the last few days since he passed. There's been so many brilliant clips of him and the stories he used to tell. He was a fantastic ambassador for the club in his latter years as well, but a fantastic player as well. But I suppose he'll probably be remembered most, not just because he was part of the Lisbon Lions team, but just for the man he was and the character he was. Sad, Somani, to see him go, especially after what I think was maybe a bit of a kind of steep decline, sadly, in his health.
Yeah, I mean, it's tragic. I mean, with the Lions overall, there's a few now that have passed away, and as much as Lisbon was before our time, being Celtic fans, you've grown up and they've always been icons, you know. Big Billy was the manager, you know, Murdoch, Jinky. They were always larger than life and you always knew them. But I think it was a quote Bernard Ponsonby said that he was the enduring spirit of the Lions. I thought that was nice and I thought it summed up Bertie. He always seemed to have time for everybody. And nearly everybody will have a Bertie story, you know, in terms of any time they've bumped into him. As a kid, I remember, you know, he worked in Baird's actually, you know, and not that I was drinking in Baird's when I was a kid, but you know, pop my head in if I was ever up the Barras, and you know, it was just weird to see him in there. It was just, but it just seemed to love being around Celtic fans. A wonderful guy, and it was really sad that kind of hit home that these guys are mortal, you know. But I don't think there's a Celtic fan or many more that would have a bad word to say about
it. Yeah, I mean, it's. He's kind of one of these figures that totally encapsulates the kind of character and spirit of the club, and someone that can, so down to earth, working class guy, and he can tell you stories for yesteryear. And you know, each time someone like that at a club passes, it's a wee bit of the club goes with it. And it's a real shame, Stu, because he was just such a character.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you could wax lyrical for forever about his talents as a player and his achievements as a player, but I think with Bertie, perhaps above maybe even some of his teammates from 67, it was his character and his spirit as a man that really kind of will be remembered. And I think it was Marcus said it the other day. He must have lived such a joyous life, because obviously there's been great footage and great stories, but anytime he was sort of seen in and around the club or anywhere, he's just always having a good time. And as you said, just loved being a part of Celtic and spreading the word about Celtic and being among Celtic fans. And it is really sad, especially when you're saying a bit of steep decline, but it's also been really nice to reflect on the man and all he's achieved and all those stories over the last couple of days. I mean, there's obviously been lots of good stories flying about, lots of good videos and stuff like that. So it's been quite bittersweet. And yeah, really, really sad. A proper legend of the club.
Liam, you kind of think sometimes, do we do enough to bring these characters of the club, that, you know, to bring them to the fore. And obviously, as they get older and older, it's maybe they've got less opportunity to be public facing and doing their bit for the club. I mean, Bertie would seem to be a guy that thrived on that, even in his later years, you know, regularly making appearances and talking about the club and championing the club. We really do miss them when they go, but, you know, maybe like everything in life, maybe we don't appreciate them enough while they are here. You know what I mean?
I definitely, I think Celtic and the people that run the club, even, you know, in the 80s and stuff, would admit themselves that they maybe didn't take the Lions well enough. They weren't given the kind of reverence that they should have been. And I think that was corrected in the latter years. And Bertie Auld seemed to be really a kind of figure point for that. He was everywhere, you know. He was, and I don't mean that in a negative way, because sometimes guys who leave football clubs, like I don't know, John Harrison and Chris Sutton, are two perfect examples, are everywhere to the point where sometimes you can, you know, their legacy can kind of become ruined a little bit. Whereas Bertie Auld seemed to be everywhere, and he's actually his, you know, his fame and his reputation seemed to grow and, you know, be enriched even further the more and more he appeared. So, I'm gutted. I'm really gutted. I actually found myself harder with it than I expected when I found out the other night, because I never seen him play. Do you know what I mean? My dad would have, but I never seen him play. But I met him a couple of times, and both times made me feel like the biggest guy in the room. Do you know what I mean? And he'd never met me before. He couldn't tell who I was for the next person. But a real legend, and really will be sorely missed around the place.
Yeah, absolutely. A massive, huge loss. And obviously, I think, you know, all our sympathies and thoughts and prayers and all that for his family are obviously grieving. So, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if it's actually been said when the funeral will be. And, you know, I would assume there would be some sort of procession past Celtic Park and things like that, but we can maybe mention that again in future pods, I'm sure. But we're going to move on to actually talk a wee bit about Scotland last night. Scotland had a pretty massive victory against Denmark, a Denmark team that got to the semi-finals of the Euros in the summer just past. At Hampden, secured a home seeded playoff semi-final and World Cup qualifying. Listen, I don't think any of us are particularly massive Scotland fans and follow it maybe to the levels of course, somebody like Gal, who's a massive Scotland fan. But Sir Manny, you know, Scotland's group of players that, you know, they're probably the best crop of players that we've had in one kind of generation for a long, long, long time, certainly in my lifetime, and a massive game where they played exceptionally well. It does give you a hell of a lot of hope for the game in Scotland, you know, because if there's that group of players that have came through kind of naturally through the years and through the system, surely we must be getting something right in this country.
I think me and you in particular should lay our cards on the table. See if there's a bandwagon because Scotland are good. I'm getting right on that. When they become shite again, I'm straight off and I'll be throwing them right under a bus.
We'll be holding hands doing it. Don't you worry about that.
I think there is a lot of talent in that Scotland squad just now. Clark, as a manager, is a guy who I'm not particularly that overly warm on. I sometimes think he's a wee bit risk averse and things like that. But you need to give him credit. But that performance last night was excellent. It maybe wasn't Denmark's absolute strongest team, but it was strong enough, and Scotland really, really took them apart. And what was good to see for us in particular was some Celtic players that had came through the academy that were on the pitch. You know, you had Ralston got on at the end for his wee cameo. You had McGregor, who was excellent, and then you've got Tierney. It's great to see, absolutely great to see that these guys are going and performing, not only at a good level, but a really, really high standard. And all joking aside, guys like Gal that have put in the hard hours for Scotland, you know, I'm not really up nor down when it comes to the national team, but it's pleasing for them because they've put up with an awful lot of crap over the years. But they've got they're going to the playoffs. You know, your immediate thought is it's going to be difficult, and in typical Scotland fashion, they'll no do it, but they do have a chance. They really do. So it was good to see.
Yes, Stu, I mean, it's as Sir Manny says there, there's a lot of players in there with Celtic links, of course, and I think just in general, it's not just the starting 11. You see players on the bench and you think, you know, the Scottish game has pulled itself together and we are getting to a point now where the Scotland national team can actually compete for major tournaments and things like that. It is a big sign of progress, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what stood out about last night more than anything is I think that that's something that's really gone against Scotland for a long time has been that mentality that, you know, we either have to play a certain way or that we're bound to endure glorious failure. And I think that that's a mindset that has slowly been eked out of these players, both because you do have a collection of now really good players that play at a high level every week, but also they're starting to see results. And last night, it wasn't just a park the bus and we've managed to ride it out and we've scored on the counter-attack. Scotland were really, really good pretty much throughout. And when they defended, it wasn't like kick and rush stuff. It was really organised and really, really thoughtful. And from a Celtic perspective, you look at the performances of, I guess, most pertinently, Callum McGregor, who's really stepped up this season. There was a few doubts about him, whether he would be good enough, whether he would be able to fulfil a captain's role as well in Scott Brown's absence. And I think that he's just gone from strength to strength. And perhaps he's benefiting from being involved with another crop of really good players that are playing at a high level. And then also, I don't want to prod you with the Tierney situation, but it's, as someone that's still very fond of Kieran Tierney, it's really great.
For fuck's sake. You don't need to, could have left that bit.
I mean, he's gone on to become like really tickling the sort of echelons of a world-class player, and it's great to see. And then, yeah, the likes of Ralston continuing to, I know he only got like a 5-10 minute cameo, but just being present in that is going to help him, help his confidence, help his progression in what's already been a really positive season. So I think that great for the nation, great to watch, and obviously a bit of a rub for Celtic as well, which is always good.
World class was a fucking stretch, but we'll move on.
Liam, name the best left backs in the world. Give me 10. Is he in there? I don't know. But, it's got to be up there.
I know. I only know three. Liam, I mean, Cal McGregor played a, you know, again, pivotal role in a player who doesn't look out of his depth, or, you know, in terms of playing with world class players, as Stu rightly alludes to. You know, Cal McGregor's role on that team, excellent to see. And as Stu said there, we've also got the likes of Anthony Ralston, who's been recognised at international level. Good to see him get some game time, albeit he played on the left. Could we just fuck him to the left and play Juranovic to the right? Is that a possibility?
I think we've got Tony Ralston doing all right at one position. Let's keep the boy, head on his shoulders. I think, firstly, for Ralston, I'm delighted for him. I think he has endured a lot of criticism, none more so than for me, and has really came onto a game this season, whether that's a confidence thing, whether that's somebody who's actually spent some time with him and coached him, I don't know, but he's doing really well, regardless of what other people will tell you, he is doing really, really well. McGregor, I think, has hit his stride. He's McGregor of a couple of seasons ago. I think Stu said there was doubts about him, whether he could be a leader, whether he could step up in the really, really big occasions. And he's doing it, you know, and he is now pivotal. He's one of the, maybe not a first, he is, you know, Scotland's midfield is very competitive. There are a lot of good players in there, some of whom are playing at a better level than him, but he is mixing it with these guys, and it's not a case of him just making up squad numbers. He's integral to it. And that can only be good for us, so long as he doesn't get injured, of course. My priority is always Celtic, but it seems to be a really, really good squad developing with Scotland. There is a belief there now, probably, that they can win these games. I think there's this idea of, oh, poor us type thing, or, you know, the nearly men is maybe gone now. Obviously, there's still a playoff, one game and then potentially another to negotiate, which could see the old Scotland come back out. But definitely signs of progress.
Yeah. I think we're obviously going to move on to talk about Celtic as the reason why we are here. But of course, it's an international break. And, you know, some other podcasts might just put out rehashed content and old episodes, but no. the Cynic Weekly are here to talk all things Celtic. But first, Sir Manny, let's talk about Steven Gerrard. Let's talk about that fucking clown. So he's pissed off down to Aston Villa, left them in the lurch. They all hate him. I couldn't help but think this. There was somebody on a Rangers podcast calling him a rat and making a career out of it. And I thought, good, you know, fair enough. Good on him. We've all been there. What's your thoughts on the fact that he's actually gone? But and how do you think this is going to affect them?
I think I said last week, because there was rumours last week that it was going to happen. I was, even in last Tuesday, a wee bit doubtful it would. And I think I said at the time, I wouldn't really mind if he stayed, because I think I would have, if I'm being all things being equal and I could have chosen, I'd like to have beaten Steven Gerrard's Rangers, because last season, the capitulation, it was more on us than them, is my feeling on the matter. Don't get me wrong, they were very consistent. But we gave up the ghost by, I mean, the league was already done by this time last year. So there was part of me wanted retribution over him, his Rangers team. However, now he's gone, it can't be anything other than good for us, because it's not just him, it's the entire backroom staff. Now, the Cynic boffins always pointed out to your man, was it Michael, Big Michael Ian Beale, and as the brains behind the operation. Now, they've literally whipped the carpet out for the entire coaching team, and they've kind of, I think, Jermaine Defoe's part of the interim coaching structure over there.
Roxy Vare is now the first team coach, I believe.
That's it. He's a set piece coach, man. So they're in good hands there.
Jimmy Bell's conditioning coach, apparently. So,
so as you can see, we've still got a tough task ahead of us with these legends on the bench over there. But we've seen from what happened with us when the Rat left us, and they brought Lennon in. They're conditioned to play a certain way, and they'll do that for a period of time. Because you can imagine these guys will come in and just tell them to keep doing what they're doing. But that erodes, that disappears. Now, obviously, we don't know who's going to be their manager, but they're going to try and implement a different style. That'll, you know, they might not start losing games right away, but that'll gradually erode, and that's where we need to capitalise on. I've got a lot of players there who I imagine wanted to play for Steven Gerrard and have links to him, who will be unsettled. We know what it's like to have players who don't particularly want to be in the team anymore. Guys who might have wanted to play for Brendan Rodgers, but not necessarily want to play for Neil Lennon.
But then see on that, I don't know if I'm not remembering it correctly. Probably I was too hazy with my rage about Rodgers, but I feel as if this time I can see quite clearly the players in that team that would be, as you say, wanting to play for Gerrard and probably want to leave now because he's not there. I don't know if we quite had the same with Rodgers. I think we were worried about some, that he might take some of our best players, but I don't think until later on under Lennon when things started to go tits up, I think at the time when he left, I don't think I was too worried that everybody was just going to be desperate to fuck off. Or am I just remembering that wrong, do you think?
Well, I think it was fine from February to May. And I think the point had been made, if Neil Lennon had come in from February to May, there wouldn't be a problem. But I think there was a number of those players are thinking, do I want to stay here and play under Neil Lennon as the longer-term manager? I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but my feeling is it's fine. They're happy to stick when he was interim. But then when he was announced going forward, you know, I think a lot of those guys wouldn't have been as, you know, lively about playing for Celtic under Lennon as they were on Rodgers. But I think that's especially true for them. So the point being is, this is a good thing for us, and they're going to end up going through a major restructure. Some of these guys have got 18 months or whatever left in their deal. You know, it's almost like this team's now come to an end. That happened to us. I think it's now happening to them. Might not happen right away, but I think you'll see things unraveling. And if they get somebody in to change it around, it's not easy. I don't think a new coach could galvanise that group of players. I think if they brought somebody in like Van Bronckhorst, they would have to bring in his sort of players, and that's going to be difficult with their financial situation. So, in conclusion, it's a good thing for us, and I'm pleased and on it.
Liam, are you pleased and on it?
Aye, mostly because Gerrard became even more and more irritating, I think, as his time went on at Rangers, because I don't know, there's this kind of smug arrogance about the guy when he was dealing with interviews and stuff like that, and that's, I don't know, just that sick of the sight of him, to be honest. I think a lot of things that Sir Manny says there are pretty much spot on. I think there is guys who were brought in at the club
because they were attracted by the allure, or they were brought in by the name of Gerrard, you know, and this opportunity to play under this guy and, you know, learn from him and potentially win things with him. That's now gone. And I think he's already, I think at the start of the season, obviously there was the issues with potentially Morelos and stuff, wasn't there? And him maybe looking for a move, and some of the other guys not having deals over the line yet and stuff, extensions. So I can see a bit of a fire sale going on, to be honest, or whether it should be a case of guys letting their contracts run down. And as, you know, we are approaching Christmas and almost halfway point of the season, it's going to be hard for somebody to implement. It's the same as signing somebody in January, probably. It's hard for them then to have a real impact on a team for the rest of the season. And I think where manager is going to be exactly the same. There's going to be a shock factor, and then there's going to be a bit of an adjustment, which will probably, whoever it will be, there might be a bit of an uptick for a bit, just purely on the kind of new manager bounce type stuff. But after that, I don't know. I think if you want to bring in Van Bronckhorst, if they got the money for him, firstly, because he's not going to come cheap, I don't imagine. If they got the money for the type of players he wants, or are they going to go for somebody like McInnes or something like that, and who, in inverted commas, knows the league, or that type of part of the we heard about Lennon? Or are they going to have the guy that punched the halftime tickets just managing it for the rest of the season? I would actually pay to see that, to be honest. That would be brilliant.
That'd be great.
That's a documentary in itself. So I'm happy, because I think it's going to be really destabilising for them. I don't think mentally they are that strong. And going forward, I think this is going to be, it's going to be only a bonus for us, really.
Stu, have you ever had a sugar daddy putting money in your pocket?
If only, mate.
I mean, it's what's happened with them for the last few years to kind of fund this rebuild, and, you know, sugar daddies are getting the money and no asking for it back and things. But it's been intimated that is possibly coming to an end as well, that the club are trying to be, you know, don't laugh everyone, but self-sufficient and not relying on these checks that they don't need to repay. I mean, if that is the case, coupled with the fact, as the guys have mentioned, the kind of destabilising nature of the whole backroom team and all that going, I mean, this could be a real pivotal point for them for the next couple of years. And on that, we need to capitalise on it, don't we?
Very much so. I mean, I've obviously greatly enjoyed it. It's been tremendous watching the kind of meltdowns, etc. And I also quite like that Gerrard's reputation, you know, I was worried that it was going to be retrospective, that, you know, he'd been this great manager and he dominated, etc. And it's not just Celtic fans that are calling out the 1-9 sort of situation. He got absolutely butchered by Tom English in the BBC, which I thought was a bit of a surprise. And just
in
his piece on the website, he absolutely tears him up, just saying that basically he could have done more, or, well, which he could have done. But I mean, I've never really rated him, so it's hard to say that maybe they wouldn't get someone in that's going to come in and do a better job than him. But they're in a really precarious situation at the moment financially. When Liam's talking about, will there be a fire sale, if the players opt to run down their contracts, they're absolutely fucked. Like, even with Champions League money, they might have to sell a few assets. And if there's players that aren't going to go, and I think realistically none of the players are going to go for the money that some people would expect on their side, that they are in a spot of bother. And when you say capitalise, I think that we're actually in a really great position where some managers, it's like a token line almost to say, oh, well, whatever's happening over there is whatever, we're focusing on our own shop. I'm sure that Neil Lennon would parrot that sort of stuff out if he was here and it was the same situation. But I get the impression that Ange really firmly believes that. And when he says that he's just focused on us, he actually really is. And I think that that's where our focus has to be. The best way to continue to apply pressure to them is by playing well and playing consistently, which we have been. I know the Livingston result was disappointing, but still played well in the game. And Celtic have now been playing at a consistent level where the system that we've implemented seems to be working. And I think that as the guys have rightly said, whatever the bounce of a new manager coming in is, that's going to ebb away. And if you're talking about trying to instill an identity and a way of playing, which is kind of what they have had for years, they haven't really changed how they've played. They just got a wee bit better at it. That's very difficult to implement, especially when the games are coming thick and fast. So they've got a small grace period where, you know, they don't play in the league for 2 weeks, maybe, if the manager's coming in the next couple of days. But obviously the cup game, if they lose that on Sunday, I think people could start to spiral pretty quickly. And there's a really good opportunity for us to apply the pressure if we just keep doing what we're doing.
So, Manny?
I still think, I mean, you touched it in it there, Stu. I think we still need to be focusing on ourselves. As boring as that sounds, it's true. I mean, we keep, you need to give the manager, like, obviously you need to back him in January, but then even going further than that, it's like concentrating on implementing what he wants to do and rebuilding our squad, because it's easy to forget the gargantuan nature of that, the turnover that we had in the summer. It was really, really massive. And see if the worst comes to it. Now, a lot of people are putting almost a gun to the side's head and saying we need to win the league because of the Champions League money and all that sort of stuff. I think you said it there, Stuart, even if they get the Champions League money, it's not like they're going to be awash with cash that they're then going to, you know, be able to blow all that. That'll steady the ship. Now, I know some people are desperate for them to go bust all over again, the new Rangers to go bust, but, you know, whatever way that works, I don't even think that the Champions League money would necessarily, it would stave off issues with debt as opposed to putting them on the front foot. So if we concentrate on ourselves, even if it doesn't come this season, bearing in mind how big our rebuild is, I still think we just can concentrate on what we're doing, because this team's coming to an end for them. It really is. And the rebuild and building a new manager in is going to be massive for them. But kind of tunnel vision for us just now, it very much even just till January in the first instance, till we get some more players in. Don't take your eye off the ball there.
Yeah, I think it's different from perhaps, you know, the first sort of like Rodgers treble winning team, where we were so dominant and they were just like a plaything. It was sport, like just laughing at them. Obviously, it's been nice and it's been refreshing that there appears to be a little bit of instability coming to the fore now, which is something that we've had to deal with for the last season or so. But yeah, we're still not the finished product. I think we've got a long way to go. And so it's good that we have a manager that kind of feels that way and is working towards that. And I just think as fans, that's where our heads need to be at as well. Enjoy it for the couple of days that it's been, but it has to go back to kind of business as usual, just focusing on ourselves, focusing on getting better.
Well, I mean, I would give a slightly different point of view in that, you know, I think one of the mistakes that we made was being too blinkered in recent years and allowing them back to the point where they did manage to win a title again. I think we should have been miles ahead of them and kept progressing, not just to keep ahead of them, but to progress our football club and you know, try and compete in Europe and all that. And we didn't. We kind of stagnated, just kind of happy to, you know, trod along and win titles and things like that. I think this situation, especially if things are going to change in terms of their finances and things like that, I think this has to be seen as a massive chance to try and claw a bit of that back. You know, I think we should, fair enough, maybe not from the management point of view, from the players' point of view, of course they're going to be fully focused on and what we can do and performances and things like that. But I think as a club higher up, I think we should be looking at this as, right, what can we do? Can we push out the boat a wee bit extra to back this manager? Can we do a wee bit more, with the caveat that if we can secure that Champions League money, the better financial position we're in, we can then kick on and do what we should have done years ago and really take the club forward again. If we were maybe a wee bit apprehensive about whether we really could make up the difference in 1 year, which I think we all were as fans, I'm sure the club must have felt like that to a certain degree as well. This hopefully gives a bit of realism to the situation, and it shows the board that actually they're not that far ahead. I mean, we've seen their performances start to decline this year already. The fact that they're going to have all this upheaval, the fact that maybe the sugar daddies are wanting their money back, go and back the manager enough to then start putting a foot down and fuck off away for these. You know what I mean? Go and kick on as a football club again. We don't want to just be competing with them, but we need to get the title back in order to facilitate further growth down the line. You know what I mean?
Just very, very quickly on that. We need to look, but don't even mention them. Don't even mention the title. Because you summed it up there when you said you need to look past them. As a football club, we should be trying to be the best football club we can in Europe, because by that very nature, you're going to be better than them. So, see, after
by admission, though, Samani, we've all pretty much said this year is about the league, and we've all been pretty much like, do you know what, Europa League will be a bonus if we get there. Maybe even rest players and just focus on the league. So we can't just chop and change now.
No, you know what I mean? No, but the point I'm making, the point I've said is concentrating ourselves in terms of what we're building. And I said a few minutes ago, see, if we don't win the league this season, we shouldn't beat ourselves up. That should be the aim, but we should concentrate on building something bigger than them, because we get wrapped up in all that shite last year.
Yeah.
In terms of focusing on just being a wee bit better than them. No, we should be looking past them. By doing that, you should be better than them. And I think we just need to kind of focus on that.
My concern is that there's a lot of people who are still involved with the club who've been here for a long time and still have this viewpoint of just being better than them, a tiny touch. And until that changes, I don't see us actually seizing opportunities like this and really putting our boot on their neck, because people will be happy enough just to win the league this year and take it back off them, and it'll be, yes, Gerrard's gone and we won the league back and they're a bit of a mess. And that kind of sugarcoats a lot of stuff for, you know, failure for a couple of years, whereby maybe they do start to struggle financially again. Maybe they do, you know, a lot of players go. So we need to actually look at ourselves first. And I think Andrew's right in that, in regards to, like, we need to focus on ourselves and get our structure right at the club before we can really start killing off these guys once and for all. And that requires major structural change at the club. So I think, as Stu said there, great, enjoy it for a couple of days. Cardboard cutouts getting turned against walls and burnt and all that stuff. Brilliant, good laugh. But we need to focus on ourselves first.
Well, speaking of people that have been at the club, what better way to kick on than by returning to the League of Ireland to sign some more players from Shamrock Rovers to help steady the books, you know, that may or may not ever play.
Jumped ahead in the rundown there, but I see where you're going, sir.
Saw a gap and sort of sneaked through there.
Can we come back to that later?
We can. Put a pin in it, mate. Consider it a little schneidy barb, and then we'll come back.
It's noted. Okay, so, I mean, let's you know, do the sensible thing, the boring thing, and focus on ourselves. Samani, where do you assess the kind of progress so far? You know, we've had this international break. The last international break was probably pretty kind to us in the sense that we didn't have any injuries. I don't think we have any injuries this time. We had a chance to clearly work on things, and we saw the fruits of that in the last block of games that we had. Hopefully a similar situation has happened this time. But before we get to what's coming up, where do you think we are in terms of our readiness for a busy, you know, the busiest period of the season, 2 games a week, 12 games between now and the 2nd of January. Are we ready?
It's going to be tough, and it's because we don't have that strength and depth. Now, what's been positive in the last game, the last couple of games, has been a guy like Beaton's performance. Now, I said it last week, and I'll say it again, I don't want Beaton's long-term future to be at Celtic, but see him being able to contribute to get us to January at the very least, that's important, because we've had McCarthy come in and he's not hit the ground running at all. And we were really tight in midfield. Rogic, we know what Rogic can do, but we also know that he's going to pick up injuries. So we know how thin we are in the middle of the park just now. This is where you're going to need some of these guys that we're not particularly fond of, have been out of favour, maybe stepping up and just kind of trying to squeeze us over that line, because it's going to be tough. The idea that we're not going to drop points in December, I mean, I'd like to think we won't, but I think it's unlikely we won't, just in terms of the amount of games we've got and the squad. You know, Kyogo, we've already touched on it before, played a lot of football in Japan before he came here. We're going to need to try and protect him as much as we possibly can. It's going to be tough, it really is, but it could make or break the season. I think if we can get to the game against them in January, still, you know, within 4 points of them, you know, if we're in that position, we're not dropping more points, we're not picking up too many injuries, I think we've got a real chance of it. But make no mistake, and always need to bear in mind, we are still threadbare, so this is going to be a difficult period coming up. I suppose what I'm appealing for, Louis, is a bit of calm here. Level heads, you know me, I'm no reactionary. I'll not throw the toys out the pram if we... Well, fuck, I will, actually, and I'm sure we all will, but...
You sacked him out. You sacked Ange a while ago. Don't forget that.
So did you, wee man. Don't start that. You've been trying to peddle this line on a few podcasts. I can't even repeat some of the things you said about
Louis, me. You've got him riled, mate. You've got him riled.
I know.
You've
never seen him like that before. he's on the ropes fighting for his life.
Fucking do you, so I will. In Ange, we trust. But no, it's going to be difficult. December's going to be really hard with that squad. So I'm just fingers crossed we can see through it, because it's going to start hitting us pretty soon.
How do you assess things so far?
So far, I think touching back on what I was saying previously, he's got to be given the time to do it. He's got to be given the time to kind of implement what he wants to implement at the club. We are the problem we've got at the moment is the quality of player he's you know, trying to implement it with. We have a very threadbare squad. We have some guys who've been here for a long time and are maybe time to move on. Maybe not necessarily in January, but maybe the end of the season or whatever. I think for him it's going to be an eye-opener. We've got 8 games in December. Some biggies in there. I don't know whether the game's big and all that stuff, but it'll be interesting to see how he deals with that, because I don't think he's maybe ever had a period of intensity like that as a manager before, and the kind of scrutiny that comes with it. I think he's done well so far to kind of deal with a lot of the pressure, but Christmas period is really, really something different, and it's quite, you know, it's quite a challenge probably for a guy like him. Maybe guys like Kyogo who are coming in, because he played a lot of football already, and they come thick and fast, heavy pitches, all that type of stuff. I think he's done. I believe in Ange. I think December for him is going to be a real, real eye opener. And I think how he reacts to that and how he deals with it, and how we come at the other end of it will be an indication as to whether or not he is really going to be the man for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think we will learn a hell of a lot from them, but I think we're going into this next block of games with a lot more confidence and belief than maybe what we entered the last block of games. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be pivotal. It will tell us a hell of a lot about not just individuals, but the team as a collective, and certainly Ange as well, and by extension. But you went in. Oh, you're on mute. He's having a terrible last 10 minutes. Right, on you go.
I've done a bowed. I've bowed it. No, I think one thing we've got going for us now is there's very clearly a team spirit there that Ange is fostering. I think it's clear that people want to play for him. There's an infectiousness about the guy in terms of, you know, even as fans, we see it. You love listening to him talk. You can see players that, you know, guys like Jota, they're playing with a smile on his face, and I think that's him. So I think that's one thing that we've got going. We're threadbare, but there seems to be a real will to win for him. So I think that's going to stand us in good stead going forward. I'll just go back and mute.
Aye, see you later. Stu, do you think that international break came possibly at the wrong time for us? Because I kind of feel as if we were singing, and my worry is that you have a break and then you come back and you can't quite get back into that rhythm again, or is that not so much a concern now?
I definitely know what you mean, but I actually think it will favour us when you're talking about how threadbare the squad is. Just the opportunity to get maybe Rogic and Starfelt back. Hopefully that's an actual sort of 7 to 10 days and not a Forest 7 to 10 months. Julien obviously closer to being back. Bit more chance for the likes of Mikey Johnson, who are just coming in at the team, to not be injured, etc. I think that taking stock after a run like that is good. And I think that we were quite fortunate with the games that we had, as we lost Rogic and Starfelt have been quite key players. I think that the squad is threadbare, but I think it's, in general, we're in a much better position than it looked like we might be. And I give enormous credit to Ange for that, for and the players for just how it's kind of now starting to galvanise, and it is going to come to like a really difficult point of the season. And I think that what we're probably going to have to do is lean quite heavily on a couple of players that are match winners, are real standout kind of performances, the likes of Jota, the likes of Kyogo, the likes of Callum McGregor. And then you can hope that maybe you can bolster and paper the cracks with the likes of Beaton managing his role in the team, etc. But I, in general, I feel really positive about it. And I think that it's exciting. I don't think after the first kind of, maybe when we spoke before the Aberdeen game, it could be over. Like, you know, that's where our heads were at, that it was doomsday stuff. And so the way that they've played since the last international break to now, and just churning out results and consistency. And then I also think that coming back for a huge game on Saturday is a really good way to come back to it.
Yeah. So I was a rather abrupt ender. Took me by surprise.
Sorry, thought you were jumping in.
No, I will. I'll go two-footed now. Yeah, I mean, Andrew spoke this week about some players who are kind of not featured so much. So for example, players like Shaw and Origidi, he made comment about the fact that they certainly did come in as development players, and it's much easier to bring those types of players in when the team's settled and things like that. But because of the way things have been, they've not had an opportunity really to play. And it's something they're going to look at in January, possibly move them out on loan and things like that. He also commented on the likes of James McCarthy, saying that him and Giamakis were players that weren't with clubs when we signed them, so they hadn't had pre-seasons and things like that. So, you know, we're maybe not, obviously we haven't seen the best of those types of players yet, but you would hope, I mean, those types of excuses can't continue for me. The idea that players didn't have a pre-season and things like that, it's November, we're midway through November, we could surely get these players up to scratch by now. But again, I know, I understand game time is different, and where James McCarthy's maybe going to fit into that, I don't know. But you know, I think it was maybe Stu that mentioned a couple of other names, you know, the likes of James Forrest. Is James Forrest going to come into this team and be a starter now, you know, after getting some game time before we finished up? Does he come straight back into the team? Do we see more of Nir Beaton, you know, Beaton done well when he's came in recently? Do we have a renewed sense of hope that he could be of value to the squad? Maybe not a starter, but be of value. I mean, there's still a lot to learn about this squad. Is there anybody or any individuals or anything that people are particularly looking forward to seeing from us? And how crucial do you think it is to have a settled starting 11 for these 12 games? Because it's a lot of games, and as somebody quite rightly alluded to, the likes of Kyogo, he's already played half a season somewhere else. How do we manage this period with such intense fixture schedule with the squad that we have?
Can I jump in? I don't think that it's feasible to have a starting 11 that's going to play through all those games. And I think that obviously Ange will have an idea of who his best team are, and also hopefully have learned maybe from experience from the Livingston game that maybe you should pick your moments when you do tinker with that. But I just think in general, when you consider the amount of games that like young Montgomery was having to play or Welsh was having to play, and now these players are options to come in and maybe give someone a rest if you're playing against maybe a weaker opposition at home, that sort of thing, instead of them being reliant to go out and do it every week. So I just think in that regard, when talking about Forrest, the fact that he's even there as an option now to start, maybe to give Abada a rest, is great. It's same for Mikey Johnson if they can stay fit. So yeah, I think that he is going to have to mix it up. I just think he's going to have to be quite careful when he does it, because momentum is important, consistency is important, and if you tinker with it too much, that can obviously affect that.
So man, he's going to get absolutely hounded if he drops Kyogo again, but isn't he? I mean, how would you manage Kyogo during this spell? Do you think you start him every game and then look to take him off when you're a couple of goals up, or what do we do?
Well, in the first instance, you do that, and you do that with McGregor as well. Where and when you can, you take them off early. And he's done that. He's done that in games. He's done that with both of them. But the Livingston game's the one that kind of stands out like a sore thumb. The performance that day was really substandard. And I think a lot to do with that was the movement of the front three. I think later on in the game, when we got the penalty and Giakoumakis missed the open goal, still rankles a wee bit, that miss. I think when we brought Kyogo, we brought some of the players on and moved him in, our movement improved then. I think you can see how much he brings to the team. So it is going to be difficult to do that. But it is a tightrope, because we're saying here he needs to manage Kyogo and you need to rest him a bit more. But you're exactly right. If he plays Giakoumakis through the middle, it's going to unsettle that front three and we'll go, why did you do that? But that's the manager's problem to deal with. I mean, looking at it over a consistent period of time, we'll probably understand that, and I can understand why he started them at Livingston. But the immediate reaction to any drop points, if he doesn't start Kyogo, will be to say, why did you do that? It's a difficult tightrope for him to walk, but that's why he's paid to be the Celtic manager.
Liam, I'm going to rhyme off the fixtures for this next block coming up. You're going to have to process them very quickly, but I want you to give me any that you think are ones that we really need to make sure that we win in terms of, you know, not having the likes of a Livingston result, for example. So we start off with the League Cup, which we're going to obviously talk about in a wee minute. That's on Saturday against St Johnstone. We have two Europa League games, obviously, to finish off our group. We've got Leverkusen away and Real Betis at home for the last game on the 9th of December. In terms of Premiership games in this block, we have Aberdeen, Hearts, Motherwell, Hibs and Rangers all at home. Now, they are all obviously big games, but they are at least home fixtures. In terms of away fixtures, we have Dundee United, Ross County, St Mirren, St Johnstone. Any that you're particularly worried about? Obviously, it's home ties against the stronger teams, away ties against probably the weaker teams. Is that set all right with you?
A little bit. I think the Hearts game in the 2nd of December, that's a big one. That's a major one, because that maybe sets the tone for how the rest of your month's going to go. Are you there? Are you starting off on a positive, or are you going to then spend the rest of your month chasing results? The other ones for me is Boxing Day, St Johnstone game. St Johnstone for me can be sticky. They're well coached. We beat them recently, but it wasn't exactly a trouncing. So that to me is a big one. I think Boxing Day is always quite important, mostly because you can just get absolutely hammered watching the game and there's no repercussions for it. I think that's a big one. I think looking towards the kind of end of that block, we play Rangers on the 2nd of January, and then we play Hearts at the end of the month. And that's, for me, is a big kind of period, because if you've done well through, you know, whatever happens in December puts added weight on the game in the 2nd of January. And then if that doesn't go your way, then you've got another big game coming straight after it. Pressure's on again. So I think, as I said there, I think the Hearts game at home, really, really integral to get yourself off to a good start for December. And I think the St Johnstone game on Boxing Day is really, really important as well. They can be sticky, they can be an uncomfortable team to play against. So winning that would be, you know, a real positive.
Sure. Just on Kyogo and how he manages minutes, I think that we should do what my work does to me, which is just run him into the ground and then give him 2 weeks at Christmas. I think that's absolutely fair. Everyone else has to do it. No, he should be no different.
Conversely, is there an option where we hire a kind of army of people to just look after Kyogo so that he literally doesn't need to do anything? Doesn't even walk. We can just put him in a wheelchair and just push him about and just get. Do you know what I mean?
I would happily do that. That sounds better than my work as well. So I'd be
same, 100%.
Sign up. Do it. Aye. Bit for the cause.
Sounds good. Aye. Someday brush his teeth, wipe his ass. Brilliant. So, Manny, I think you mentioned earlier on you know, about trying our best to try and, you know, take as many points as we can. Obviously, that's the aim any time we play. But in terms of the title race and working towards, obviously, that pivotal game on the second, I can't remember, wasn't it last year? Was it a year before where we had done really well in December? I think we'd won pretty much every game, and then we fucked it against them on the last one. And, you know, there's a worry that that could happen. We have to peak at the right time in terms of performance, but we also need to get the result. Where are your confidence levels in terms of, do you think we will have closed the gap, maybe even surmounted the gap by the time we get to that game? Or do you think we just basically just need to stay within touching distance kind of thing?
There's a bit of an unknown about this, and I think that's changed even more so with the situation with the manager for them. My feelings was always I'd like to stay four. That was it. Any more than that, I think we're getting more difficult. Any closer is obviously a bonus, but if we can stay within 4 points of them and then we play them on the first, assuming we've not got bad injuries, I think we're at a position now whereby we should be taking them at home. I said that the other week. I still think it now. I think that's a next step for Ange, because we're giving him rightly the plaudits in terms of the way he's played. But ultimately, big games come and you need to win big games. We were unlucky at Ibrox, a home game against them, assuming we've not got bad injuries at that time. If we can stay within 4 points of them or whatever, and we get them there and then, I fully expect us to beat them. So that's my thought process on it. As much as it would be good to overcome the gap and all that, you know, we're assuming that they're going to capitulate, and that's not necessarily going to be the case. We don't want to go 7 points behind, because seven, you know, it could easily be one or it could go to seven. You know, seven's a different, we're talking a different thing here. Stay 4 points. If we keep it to that and then play them, then I'd be very happy.
I think depending on how the weekend goes as well, you might end up facing them in a cup final on the 19th. And then even if we don't end up playing them, if we could go out and win the League Cup, I think that's going to be absolutely enormous for the momentum and the belief in the team. To be winning silverware so early on in your tenure for Ange, and just for the likes of Jota and Kyogo to see what the club's actually about and how that actually feels to be a success, I'm not sure whether or not the players are ready for that yet. I think that winning mentality is something that they're just starting to foster, and whether or not the pressure of a cup final, maybe against your biggest rivals, would be a step too far just now would be interesting. But I think that is going to be a factor as well in terms of momentum going into such an important run of games, especially towards the second.
Well done, Stu. That was an exceptional point that no one else thought of, but that's why you're here.
Saved it.
So let's talk about the game of the weekend. You know, we came into this international break on a massive wave of positivity. Everything was really looking up. We've been doing well, performances, results, everything going the right direction. Let's hopefully continue that. Let's assume that we continue that. Taking that form into the game at the weekend on Saturday against St Johnstone, the semi-final of the Scottish League Cup, which obviously we're going to win, as Stu has rightly pointed out. So, Manny, how do you feel about this game? You know, Liam's mentioned earlier the St Johnstone game from a few weeks ago. We were 2-0 winners. I think that was the game that Giamakis got the first one and things like that, although we did kind of benefit from a break of the ball and stuff. Are you confident ahead of the game? It is a massive game. It's a cup semi-final. I think we probably are losing sight of that a wee bit. I know I certainly have. It's not really crossed my mind that we've got a semi-final of a cup at the weekend, but it's a huge game. And as Stu says, a huge game for Ange.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I'm more thinking about the fact it's a 5:15 kickoff on a Saturday and you can drink before and after the game. That Hibs semi-final a couple of seasons ago at the same time was sensational. Sensational. The crowd was in fine fettle because everybody had been to the pub before. So, I'm glad you've reminded me it's a cup semi-final. I just thought it was a boozing session, to be honest with you. But that's huge. Am I confident? Yeah. I mean, there was once upon a time we talked about Hampden not being kind to us and things like that. You know, in recent years, it absolutely has. It's going to be a bigger pitch. You know, big pitch. I think we've got players like Jota, you know, and Kyogo who are in great, great form. St Johnstone, as Liam says, they can be sticky. They're no pushovers. They've obviously won both cups last season. But the form that we're in, the voice of the crowd full of beer, etc., I think it should spur us on. So I'm pretty confident. But you're right, it is a big game. And conversely, Stuart's saying if we get to the final and we win silverware, that's a big thing. You know, it would be a big thing to lose on Saturday as well in terms of momentum. So we shouldn't. I hope the team are keeping their eye on the ball. It's, you know, instead of guys like me just keeping their eye on the ball.
In terms of starting 11, you know, let's assume that Starfelt is fit. Let's assume, well, I suppose we don't totally know if Rodgick will be fit, but, you know, Welsh will play instead of Starfelt. Starfelt, if he's fit, I would assume would come back in. The fullbacks are the fullbacks, you know, Ralston and Juranovic, I don't think is really going to change. The midfield three, would anybody change Beaton out of there if Rodgick isn't fit, or is everybody quite happy with Beaton, McGregor and Turnbull if that's your three? Any advance on that?
I think that's the best of your current situation at the moment. If Rogic isn't fit, even if Rogic is fit, you're probably not going to get a good solid 90 minutes out of him. I would imagine that Rogic would be more beneficial coming off the bench than he would be trying to give you 60 minutes with his wee sparrow lungs after not playing for a few weeks. So I imagine that will be Beaton, McGregor and Turnbull.
Liam, where do you stand on Leila Bada? Would you like to see James Forrest come back in on the right and take that place, or are you quite happy with Abada being there? Because he certainly seems to be Ange's first choice anyway.
Aye, he does. I think there was calls a couple of weeks ago for him maybe rested a bit. And I think that is correct. I think, especially with the period coming up, if Forrest is back, then I don't see any harm in the two of them rotating. I think for this weekend, being cup semi-final, and for guys like Jota and Abada and Kyogo to never play at Hampden, it's a big occasion for them. I think you need to give these guys an opportunity to show what they can do, because I think it's more damaging for them potentially if in a situation like this you maybe take out Abada and put in somebody like Forrest. You're going to do potentially more harm to his confidence that if you take him out, give the guy a chance on a big pitch to show what he's made of. But we'll hope that the occasion doesn't get to him and does actually quite the opposite, and you know it becomes something that spurs him on. So I'd be happy to see Abada start with the knowledge that Forrest is there, a guy who, as you said, has played at Hampden many, many times and has played in these big occasions many times. So if you are stuck, then there's no better option than to bring him on. Similarly with Rogic, I wouldn't risk Rogic from the start. I would keep him on the bench if he is available, because we all know what he can do off the bench. We all know how he can change games.
Especially at Hampden,
aye. I've still got a scar on my leg from where I fell in a seat however many years ago celebrating a goal for his. So, but to go back to Abada, I would definitely start him. I think allow him to sample the atmosphere and sample what it's like to play in a cup semi-final and see if he is up to it, see if he rises to the occasion.
So, Manny, the game a few weeks ago at Celtic Park, St Johnstone came in and sat in, which kind of surprised me, because, you know, you've got to give St Johnstone a hell of a lot of credit for how they've went about their business in the last couple of years and the trophies that they've won and things like that. But I think we talked about it at the time that it kind of seemed like it was a team like we've seen a lot recently. Teams are coming, they're camping in and sitting, probably because they are fearful of the way that we play. Do you think at Hampden that'll be different? Can you see them have such a low block, if you will allow me to use that phrase? Do you think they'll do that, or do you think the game will be a wee bit more open, which might help the likes of Abada get space in behind?
I think because it's a cup semi-final, you don't know. They might come and present that way in terms of fear of how we play. But in a cup semi-final, it's different from a league match, you know. It's all or nothing. So I think they might be a wee bit more expansive, and hopefully that would play into our hands. So I don't know how low our block's going to be, quite frankly. But I would think that it being a cup tie, you might see them come out a wee bit more.
Predictions? Give us a prediction, Samani.
Celtic 4, St Johnstone 2.
Really? You ain't no scored 2 goals against us?
Aye.
Aye.
We concede a lot of goals.
Come on, mate.
You don't watch us?
I'm going for a clean sheet. Stu?
3-1 Celtic.
3-1. Liam?
I'm going to go 4-1 Celtic.
Fantastic. I'm going to be bold. You know what I'm like with my predictions? 5-0. 5-0. A fucking barnstormer. I think it's going to be... we're going to put on a show at Hampden, I think. I think the likes of Kyogo and Jota and things like that, first time at Hampden, as you've mentioned. I think they're going to make it a real memorable one. Before we go, we're going to wrap up, but Stu, we have to come back to your earlier point. I noted it on my hand. You had a bit of shite to fling. Would you like to fling it?
Do you know what's funny? I didn't even read the thing. I just know that we got linked with some player from Shamrock Rovers. And when you've got Ange no playing the last one we signed, then it doesn't bode well.
Well, listen, he's best pals with Liam Shaw. And the both of them were emotional that they were going to be split up. But the individual
Shaw?
Can...
Liam Shaw.
Oh, fucking
Liam
fucking
Shaw that used to play for Sheffield Wednesday.
Fuck off. Liam Scales.
That's the level of the impression that Scales has made. My left back and your left back.
I love him. But just,
I love him too, mate.
I love Liam Shaw as well. Yes, so Shamrock Rovers star Danny Mandrio? I don't know. Big Danny. He has been linked. I think he is a central midfielder, I believe. 23-year-old. Again, it's another player coming from Shamrock Rovers, which, I think a lot of people are going to be very cynical about it. The cynic will certainly be very cynical about it, but we'll see what happens there. We've also been linked with Fernando Henrique, who is a Brazilian. I think he is a defensive midfielder, which we've been linked with quite a few times over the years, but I think they are leaked. Finishes in December, so it's again another link that's been in the papers. Listen, we're going to be linked with so many players, especially in the coming months before January, but you would hope that we'd be getting our business done relatively soon, but I'm sure that's stuff that we will cover in coming weeks. Are we all happy to leave it there? Yes, they all nod emphatically. Fantastic. Listen, this has been a pleasure. It'll be good to have Celtic back. Yes, we talked a wee bit about Scotland. Yes, we talked a wee bit about them and had a wee bit of a laugh at them. I hope people aren't too offended by that. But, it's been an international break. What the fuck do you want us to do? Christopher Samani, Cup semi-final at the weekend. There'll be lots of goals. Your liver is going to be destroyed. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Louis. Hopefully it's a barnstormer, as you say. We win 5-0. Been a pleasure being on the podcast of the proletariat this evening.
You had a rocky wee patch in the middle there, but you regained your composure, which was great to see.
I got you back with the Liam Shaw thing at the end, so I'm quite happy leaving it.
Wee dick. Stu Diggin, we've still not seen your face tonight, but I've no doubt you're still at your handsome best, but thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully we get a barnstorming performance that is befitting as we tribute for Bertie. That would be nice.
Liam, hopefully we've done enough to entice you back. We'd love to have you back if you would be willing.
Hey, look, I've not got anything else going on in my life, right? Like, this is all gal. Somebody's got to have a word with him. I'm available every week. Do you know what I mean? I could become part of a kind of trifecta of shite pattern between me, you and Sir Manny. Do you know what I mean?
That sounds good, because we had bowed there trying to be the trifecta for a few weeks, and thank fuck he's away.
He's been shelved, man.
Get him to fuck.
Aye. That's a great note to leave it on. Absolutely, absolutely. We will be back next week, of course, reviewing the Cup semi-final and everything else to come. This has been The Cynic Weekly. And we'll speak to you down the road.